You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Rose Manley.
Hi, Richard.
And Orla Shinawy.
Hello, both.
Hello, everyone. How are you both? It's been a month or so. We've all been busy on the Giro, haven't we?
Mm, we have.
But here we are convening.
Men cycling, yes.
Men cycling.
Yeah, what a snooze.
It was a snooze, wasn't it?
Orla did a valiant job of making it much more exciting than it actually was, I think, actually.
Thank you.
What about the cycling podcast,
Richard,
Rose?
No, I didn't.
Well, I have to say,
I keep on coming back to that episode with, no offence to you, Richard, but you weren't there, but the one with the three-breasted gingerbread woman and the Johannes de Fuck going round. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember that.
You haven't been listening to Daniel and Rose.
I don't listen to it when I'm not on it.
Yeah,
Rose.
I find that episode very amusing, actually.
I'm joking, I did listen to it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it looks like your coffee's arriving, Rose. This is wonderful service, isn't it?
Where's mine?
Well, you're in Amsterdam, Orla, so it's difficult to get you a coffee.
Anyway, enough.
I mean, you know, I will say the cycling podcast is a lot slicker than this, isn't it? There isn't coffee being delivered.
No, well, there you go.
Anyway,
we're doing all right, job.
Listen, we've got to look forward and reflect, haven't we? We're looking forward to the women's tour, and from next week we will be giving that nightly coverage, all six stages. We must say a big thank you to Skoda, whose message you heard at the top of the show there. And they've come back as a sponsor of the cycling podcast Femina to carry us through the women's tour and for the rest of 2019. So thank you very much to them. Very grateful. And I'm just awaiting delivery of the car.
Very excited. I loved that Karoq that we had last year.
I hope we get another Karoq, but I'm not sure what we're getting, Rose.
Imagine if we got the same. Imagine if that one has just been branded all year.
Fine.
Going around the country and we got it
back. As long as we get a car, I think would be... We'll be fine. A three-person bicycle might not be the most practical for getting around the women's tour.
No, but we're
back up.
I did say, Orla, we're going to reflect briefly as well on our attendance at the British Podcast Awards a couple of weeks ago, where the cycling podcast Femina was nominated in the best sports podcast category.
Woo!
And it was a very glitzy affair, wasn't it? Lots of people. I mean, we were at that event a couple of years ago, and it felt sort of bigger, better, more organized, more prestigious.
Well, I haven't actually asked you guys how you got on. Who did you see? Who were the big celeb spots?
I saw Richard Moore from the cycling podcast.
No, I heard his face is very peachy.
In real life. Yeah.
No.
Wasn't quite
definitely
what it was.
Face for radio.
No, he was there. Michael Sheen. The actor was giving out an award. Lance Dustin Black, the filmmaker and husband of Tom Daley.
Yes. No.
Sparkling white trousers he was wearing.
Oh, wow. My goodness. They were so impressive. I actually then went and wore a pair of white jeans on air just because I thought that
you're inspired.
That was the way to go.
And you, Richard, are wearing them right now. Some sparkly white trousers.
It's all I wear.
Who else was there? Jamie off of Made in Chelsea, which Richard was excited about. Jamie Lang.
Oh, get all nervous and shy around him, I bet.
He did. The hostess, I have to say, I developed a huge girl crush on. She was hilarious. Carriad Lloyd. She does the Grief Cast, which I haven't actually listened to.
Oh, but that's award. That's one of the ones that won an award last year, didn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I do think it's very funny being about grief. You know, but she is hilarious. She was brilliant.
She was brilliant. Oh, wow. She struck just the right sort of tone between giving it the seriousness it deserved, but also being very, very funny and very spontaneous, very able to react to unexpected, you know, blasts of music or things happening. So it was excellent. The one bit of a downer of the night was that the award winners weren't allowed to make speeches. So the people presenting the prize would come up and make a speech or say something funny, then present the award, and the award winner would come up and just be sort of ushered off. That was a bit odd. But
that was a bit weird, except that was sort of then that rule was bent the longer the night went on.
It was bent as well, according to the status of the prize winner.
If you grabbed the microphone.
There were a couple of winners who sort of seemed to just take it on themselves to say something. But anyway, it was a great evening, wasn't it, Orla? And as we sat there awaiting the sports category, we sort of said to each other, would you be happy now with a place in the top three? Because at least then you get a mention. And we agreed that we would be, while secretly thinking, yeah, but we'd really like to win. Anyway, we got a bronze medal. We got bronze behind two football podcasts. And I think we were pretty pleased with that, weren't we?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was chuffed, actually, because let's not forget, it was the only podcast that was even shortlisted that dealt with women's sport. And I think that in itself says a lot, and it's quite groundbreaking. I was chuffed with it, really, because, you know, we are a niche sport and we're a niche version, a niche corner of that niche sport. So to get that level of recognition was brilliant.
And there's so many.
And I think we should all give ourselves a pat on the back.
Yeah, we should. There's so many sports podcasts around as well. I mean, there's just thousands and thousands. So to be.
Oh, my God. And it's getting more and more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's a very busy scene, the podcast world these days. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you, Orla and Rose, and thank you everyone who listens to the cycling podcast, Femina. It did feel like quite a nice moment, didn't it, to have that recognition? And it's given us a sort of a spring in our stride for the women's tour starting next week. But there has been a lot of racing over the last few weeks, Orla. Have you got a brief news roundup for us, please?
Can I just say, I'm sure I've said it before, but I was listening to one episode of the cycling podcast from the Giro, and I think we were maybe 20 minutes in when Lionel says, anyway, let me finish off the news roundup. And Daniel said, oh, you're still on the news roundup. And yet I get castigated for,
I think 20 minutes in
enough.
Is a bit of an exaggeration, but anyway.
No, they did most of the podcast.
No, it was.
So maybe, Richard, if you
Lionel's very long-winded, isn't he?
And and interjected every now and again. Maybe it would. Anyway, I'm okay. Defending myself from the news roundup.
I'm looking forward to the stories of the stages next week with all your local references.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to throw out a bit of an appeal on that later when we talk about the women's career.
I'm going to appeal to that.
Themes. But yes, for now, we'll just do a simple news roundup. So we have had the Tour of Chongming Island, a three-day sprinter stage race, and it was a clean sweep for Larina Vebus. The 20-year-old Dutch rider for Park Hotel Valkenburg took all three stage wins and the overall, obviously, delivering on the promise that she'd shown all spring. Now, stage one was her first Women's World Tour win, remarkably. She was an old hand at it by the end of the week. Only her second year as a senior, so we've been right to keep an eye on her all season. The Amgen Tour of California, Bols Dahlmans dominated with two stage wins and the overall with Anna van der Breggen. The team brought the previous two winners in the form of van der Breggen and defending champion Katie Hall. Van der Breggen took stage one, upsetting any expectation of a sprint finish, and then she held on to that race lead for the remaining two stages. So the race gave us the first ever summit finish up Mount Baldy, and that went to Katie Hall, who had the support of van der Breggen on the climb, both crossing the line almost together with Ashley Milman-Passio in third. Now, you may remember when van der Breggen won in 2017, she only took it by 1 second over Katie Hall. So it was expected to be a formidable pairing, with Hall having joined Bols this year. And Hall indeed finished second on GC ahead of Milman-Passio for CCC. Stage three was taken by Elisa Balsamo of Valcar Silence Cycling. On to Imakumeen, I never know how to pronounce that properly, Imakumeen Bira.
That's what I'd go for.
I just call it Bira.
We'll go with Bira.
Just to avoid it, yeah.
We'll go with Bira. GC taken by Elisa Longo-Borghini of Trek Segafredo. She got her first win of the year and her first win, actually, in almost a full calendar year. Amanda Spratt from Mitchelton Scott was second. Soraya Paladin of Ali Cipollini in third. And we had stage wins for Julian Dora, Amanda Spratt, Taylor Wiles, and of course, Elisa Longo-Borghini. Then we had the Lotto Turingen Ladies Tour. And on the GC, it was a win for Catherine Hammes of WNT Rotor Pro Cycling. Pernilla Mattison of Team Sunweb in second. And third was Lourdes Oyer beating Jimenez of Movistar, with stage wins for Barbara Guariski, Marta Bastianelli, Vita Heine, Lisa Klein, Ellen Van Dijk, and Alina Cecchini. In other news, the Austrian mountain biker Christina Kollmann-Forstner has been suspended after being connected with Operation Adderlass, the blood doping ring, which seems to be never ending. The UCI notified of her potential anti-doping rule violation based on information it received from the law enforcement authorities in Austria. There's your news roundup.
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
I really love my Rafa Bib Short because they have the best fit, individual fit, and I have a good feeling. I can ride my bike as long as I want. Hey, I'm Lisa Klein and I'm racing for Canyon SRAM. I think the most important thing is that they are pretty individual, so we can choose our chamois, the length. So yeah, it suits like a kind of second skin, and we have different fabrics for every temperature, so there's no excuse to don't ride your bike. I think the Rafa Bib shorts are quite the best in the world.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, headline sponsor of the Cycling Podcast and the Cycling Podcast Femina. Their support is very much appreciated. It keeps us going all year. Thank you to Rafa. If you want to have a look at some of the Rafa bib shorts mentioned in that clip there, go to rafa.cc. So that was you rattled through that, Orla. There's been a lot of racing, and that was a pretty speedy.
It was, wasn't it?
Well, call it peer pressure, whatever you like.
Oh, goodness.
Well, what we should have remembered, though, also, is that the person who, well, you guys were telling me, the person who won a lot of the podcast awards was a poet. Mm. So really, Orla should stick to her guns on the free jazz, you know, meandering, long, poetic, because then we might actually bump ourselves up the standings next year.
We'll give George the poet a run for his money.
Well, that's a challenge for you next week. I guess the two big ones were Bira and Tour of California, weren't they, really? And Bira, quite a return to form, or finally coming to form for Trek Segafredo, the new team, which has sort of shown flashes, hasn't it, this year. But that was a very strong kind of overall performance. Elisa Longo Borghini obviously won the race. It's a very tough race. It's in the Basque Country and pretty hilly. Taylor Wiles won a stage as well. So that, it looks like that team might be sort of clicking through the gears. Elisa Longo Borghini is coming to the Women's Tour next week with it's a very strong team, actually, as strong as any on paper, I think, Trek Segafredo. But that was did you manage to catch any of that, either of you two?
I didn't catch it at the time, but caught up with it. And I think the key to Trek, kind of check, because they have won plenty of things, but just not Women's World Tour standard races. But I think what was key is I think I saw a different style of racing from them. They seem to be aggressive on every stage. I mean, Cordon Rigaud was attacking, and Anna Plichter was in the break, and it seemed like they were always on the front or going off and trying to animate the race a lot more. And I think before this point, we've seen them kind of sit back a bit and expect to be counter-attacking a lot more. And I think really they made their own luck by being a little bit more animated and trying to get into every single move that was going at that race. And obviously it paid off with the stage wins and the GC position of Longo Borghini.
And it may well be, in hindsight, when we look back in the season, that we think that it was actually a mature way to start a new team. You know, there's no need for them really to hit the ground running. They did. They had a win at Down Under, didn't they, I think? Mm. It's full of seasoned pros who know what they're doing. So it may well be that they've got certain targets for the year and they're focused on that above anything else.
And Longo Borghini, I mean, she used to be so consistent, and she seems the last year or so to have been plagued by a bit of inconsistency, illness, problems. And this was a bit of a return to form for her, which, you know, when you looked at the team and they were the riders they were assembling last year and over the winter, you looked at her as being one of the leaders, didn't you, really?
But I think actually what is amazing is that I was looking at their results, and obviously this is the first World Tour win, but actually 7 of the 13 riders on their squad have won races this year, which really speaks to kind of a talent across the board. We've had wins from Longo Borghini, from Wiles, from Van Dijk, from Cordon Rigaud, from Lepisto, from Winder, and from Paternoster. So, I mean, actually, they've won, and the wins have been spread across the team, which I think when we think, because they're such a big team, I think we think they're going to win everything, but actually they have been quietly getting on with their business, I think.
And that's kind of what I mean when I say that we may look back and decide that it was quite a mature way for them to start the season, really, because who's expecting them to win from the off? Us, you know, we're the ones saying that they have the quality and the calibre and the experience to be winning races left, right and centre, but they are winning in maybe a different way. Elisa Longo Borghini, not in a different way, that's ridiculous. Yeah, they win or you don't, but you know what I mean? They're not all World Tour race wins. Mm. But Elisa Longo Borghini hasn't won since last year, the Mediterranean Games road race. She was incredibly consistent at the Women's Tour, and that is a race that suits her. She won the mountain classification last year, came sixth in the overall GC. So if she's coming into form again, she was such a brilliant addition to the race as a whole, I found, last year, because she just brought so much spark to it. And if she's coming into form now ahead of the Women's Tour, then that would be brilliant to see.
Well, the Women's Tour of California as well, I mean, that was another team, a team around whom there are big expectations. Both Dolmans were dominant there. And Anna van der Breggen won the race in the end. Katie Hall, who was the winner last year and really dominated American racing last year. A very surprise signing over the winter for Bulls Dolmans. I mean, she's a kind of pure climber. And she has that that challenge that a lot of American riders face of adapting to European racing and on small roads and so on. But at the Tour of California, that's, you know, part of the world where she lives and obviously where she spends a lot of time training. And she loves Mount Baldy in particular, and she won up there. But I spoke to her this week just about that race and about how she was adapting to life in a new team, a European team, and doing some European races and what her targets are this year as well. She was at her altitude training camp at Mammoth Lake in California, where she spends a lot of time. And here's what she told me. I mean, Katie, I was going to ask you, first of all, just about the Tour of California, obviously a race that you know really well and have won. What was it like this year, riding for your new team?
It was a different experience. I mean, still, that race I've been to 4 times before with my team, but I had never been with a team of the caliber of Bulls, and having another leader like Anna there. And so I think I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. Anna asked me at the beginning of the race what my goals were for the race, and I said, for either you or me to win this race. And she sort of laughed and thought that was funny, but we went 1-2 in the race, and so I feel it was pretty successful.
Was that, so I mean, as far as the team was concerned, did they also go in with both of you as potential leaders?
Yeah, I think we sort of planned on either of us. Like, I think you don't know who's gonna climb fastest on a finish like Mount Baldy, and there's really no faking it. So just leaving that open to both of us to put us both in good position and climb our hardest to the top of Mount Baldy was the team plan.
And you won the stage and you finished second overall. I mean, how did that compare for you? How are you finding the experience of riding in such a strong team, and especially with somebody like Anna van der Breggen?
It's one of the things that I think has been the coolest for me is getting to just train with Anna and kind of talk to her about how she thinks about racing, just her mind about it, because I think that that's such a big part of the sport. And getting to be just up close to learn from kind of one of the greatest there's ever been is a thing I'm really, really grateful for.
Can you share any of the secrets? What have you learned? Is there anything in particular, and does it relate to training or, you know, approach to racing?
I think just in general, how important your mental state is. I think this is a thing we all know, but I think just seeing when Anna decides she's going to be in a certain place, in a certain position, at a certain point in the race, and just doing it and not letting any of the small things get in the way is a thing that I'm still trying to learn from her.
apart from that, being on the new team has obviously led you to Europe and racing some of some more of the races here. And I know that, you know, you've had a few years on one team and racing a lot in the US, and that you were at a bit of a crossroads, I think, when your team came to an end and what to do. How has joining Bulls Dolmans helped you? Do you feel like you have a kind of a new perspective and a new lease of life? How has it felt to be part of that team?
Yeah, I really feel like I have exciting new challenges here. Like, really trying to be successful in Europe is a whole nother level than being successful in the US. And so, yeah, that's the expectation here, is that you're going to win some races, or at least play a critical role in helping your teammate win some big races in Europe. And for me, I think that was like just the challenge and the pressure that I needed to kind of keep progressing in the sport.
And you've spoken before about how, like a lot of American riders, the physical aspect, you know, and the racing on smaller roads and that, all that kind of stuff can you know, inhibit your performance. How have you found that so far? Is that something you feel that you're developing?
Yeah, I think, yes, I'm still working on it. It's definitely still a challenge for me. I think as soon as the bunch gets smaller, like in the mountains and stuff, I have a much easier time, but really fighting for important corners with the whole bunch is still a thing I need to do better. And I'm really, I guess, learning how to use my teammates and how to, yeah, rely on some of their strengths to help me with some of the things I'm struggle with. I don't like to fight that much, so it's always hard.
And is it harder because your team has got such a, you know, tradition of winning or dominating races? And I guess there's a lot of expectation from the team, from yourself, from people watching the sport, from other riders as well. Has that increased the pressure that you feel in races to do the job as well as just ride well, but to do a job for the team?
For me, I don't feel like that's the biggest pressure. I think really wanting to do right by my teammates is what really motivates me, is they want me to do something and I want to do it to the best of my ability. And I think, yeah, historical domination of the team is not a thing I contemplate too much when I'm racing.
And you mentioned you're at Mammoth Lakes just now. I think you go there a lot, don't you? Is altitude training, has that always been part of your preparation?
Yeah. Especially for some of the races we have here in America, we have a couple races at altitude, and I really feel altitude prep is important for races at altitude. Right now I'm prepping for the Giro, which is less at altitude, but I still think that this is the right kind of prep for me, just with such a long and hard and hot race that preparing up here, where it's also quite hot actually, will be good prep.
And the Giro Rosa, I mean, I know that was a big part of, you know, wanting to join a European team and have a go at that race. What are your hopes going into that race? Will it be the same as Tour of California, where, you know, you'll be part of a strong team and it'll be whoever's strongest in the race, or do you have your own ambitions there?
I think I feel just like I did about California, where it would be nice to win, but as long as one of my teammates wins, I feel really happy too, and especially if I can make myself critical in the success of the team. I think, Anna is just really, really, really strong, and so I'll be riding for her, and that's an honor for me. And yeah, maybe I'll get some of my own opportunities too, but yeah, we'll see. It's gonna be a fighting Giro, I think. I think it'll be really fun race.
Chute de l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind me to tell you that this episode of the cycling podcast Femina is sponsored by
Harry's Razors.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
That was brilliant, Rose. I mean, you've given us poems, haikus.
I gave you one haiku, and then Lionel did a limerick at the Giro. So
was that the Giro? I think it was.
Yeah, it was very early on at the Giro, it was, yeah.
I think it was at the Giro. And I'm sorry, Lionel, I know you have your Irish passport now, so you are bona fide, but that wasn't a proper limerick. And I did want to message him at the time, and then I thought, that's really mean.
Because I would have ruined his day, Orla.
Yes, I've saved it for saying it.
Well, broadcasting it.
But because a limerick, I can't even remember what it was, but a limerick is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- same as one of the other words. So instead of rhyming words, he just doubled up in a word.
That's true. I've forgotten it. So did he rhyme like Harry with Harry or razors with razors or something like that?
Well, rookie. None of this.
Something like that. Yeah, none of
this has anything to do with
Harry's
razors.
Which is repetition rather than rhyming.
I've used my Harry's razor this morning. They're wonderful razors, offer great value as well. And we have a special offer for Cycling Podcast Femina listeners. A trial set for just £3.95. All you have to do is go to harrys.com/cycling. What do you get with the Harry's trial set, Rose?
You get. I should remember this off.
I'm sure you say it in your sleep. Do you know?
No, I do. I say I'm snoozing off, and I say weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, travel blade cover. That was like
That sounded a bit sexy.
Oh, did it? I thought it sounded like those weird things on YouTube that lull people to, you know, people are into that thing where people whisper things.
Oh, yeah.
What is that called?
Oh, yeah. I'm one of the people that's susceptible to that. Yeah.
I'm surprised you're not already asleep.
What's it
asleep called? Asleep or aroused? I don't know.
Anyway, get started shaving.
I thought it was quite sexy. I'd listen to that again.
Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Go to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling. So that was Katie Hall, a Bulls Dolmans rider now, 32 years old, raced for many years for United Healthcare in the US. That team folded at the end of last year, of course, and I think she was at a bit of a crossroads about whether to even carry on, and this new challenge has obviously breathed fresh life into her career and her ambitions and so on. She's very excited about the Olympic road race in Tokyo next year, but she's clearly been signed by Bulls Dolmans for her climbing ability, because she's an excellent climber. She rode very well at La Course last year, which was a very climby course, wasn't it? But you would imagine that it's races like the Giro Rosa that she's been signed for, and you would imagine to provide support in the mountains for Anna van der Breggen in particular.
I think it'd be really interesting to see what she can do in a full season in Europe, because she rode the Giro Rosa before in 2014, her first season as a professional, finished 67th in that, and she said that she feels like she's got unfinished business with it nearly. I think she was very disappointed last year, given the season that she had when she won every major stage race in North America, that her team weren't given a wildcard invite to the Giro Rosa. So she probably does feel like she's got unfinished business. But it's interesting that she says that, you know, she sort of struggles with the bike racing element of, you know, elbows and whatnot, because we always wonder how riders do make that transition from American racing, North American racing, I should say, to European racing, you know, because they have these wide open avenues compared to the tiny twisty roads of Europe. And I read an interview that she did earlier this year. She'd been in a training camp to Calpe with her new Bulls Dolmans teammates, and she said that she was amazed. She had her eyes opened by how much training you could do in a bike, and also by how you can handle a bike by watching the rest of the Bowles Dolmans riders. And I find that remarkable and also very exciting, really, at the age of 32, because she did come into the sport quite late. She was studying a PhD when she started riding her bike. So she clearly is someone who's got a huge natural ability. But if she wants to keep learning, then she's still got huge potential, I think, to go further. And she's arguably on the best team for that, riding next to Anna van der Breggen. If they always manage to balance those ambitions on that team. So it could be a really exciting year for her, I think.
Hi, my name's Sarah Story. I'm a cyclist with Story Racing, and I support Skoda's campaign to close the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Yes, thank you very much indeed to Skoda for supporting the cycling podcast Femina at the Women's Tour. And for the rest of 2019, very grateful to them. And we're looking ahead to the Women's Tour, of course, and our daily coverage, which starts on Monday. We're heading off there on Sunday, picking you both up at the airport, hopefully in a Skoda. Ideally.
And one from a hen do, one from saying goodbye to the family. Woo. So we'll be in different levels of energy, I think, Rose. We'll balance each other out.
Probably same level of energy, but different causes. one will be yeah. Right. One will be from mothering, one from be henning.
Well, put just a nice curry house in Beckles to start the week off. Ooh. Well, on Sunday night. And we're looking forward to our second year of covering the race in this way. A 6-day race this year as opposed to a 5-day race last year. And I spoke to Mick Bennett, the race organizer. He looks after the Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour, and he's obviously very involved in designing the course and coming up with a route that will be challenging and attractive. And here's what he said about this year's race.
Before we get the over, let's just preface why we've done what we've done in increasing the length of the race. The elevation gain and making it tougher, if you like, and it certainly is that, were very aware that were probably several riders missing from the top. I think there's about five missing from the top 10 last year, and we wanted to put that right and address that as an issue, because we brag about this being the biggest and the best women's stage race in the world, and it is on many fronts. But one of the fronts was it was probably lacking some of the top 10 riders. So we've addressed that issue this year in making it, without question, the toughest edition ever, with 8.5, probably 9,000 metres of elevation gain. And we put this in towards the back end of the race. On the final three stages, I think we've got something like 2,000 metres elevation gain. And we've got a hilltop finish at Burton Dasset, and a gruelling stage in Powys, and then the final stage into Carmarthen. And the last two stages, believe me, if Burton Dasset doesn't, I was going to use the expression, kill them, then the final two stages will. We have to. So we've addressed the difficulty, if you like, and the technical challenges that sit within that as well. But we've also addressed that we need stages for the likes of Kirsten Beale, the sprinters, and Corinne Rivera to a certain degree. And we've also addressed the issue that we have lots of cycling infrastructure in this country, which we very rarely call it our grand tours. Highlight, and that's why we've gone to Kent Cyclo Park for stage two. But we put it in early because, you know, we need the race to settle down to a rhythm. So we've attracted far more riders in the top 10 this year. We've got new venues, Oxfordshire, Powys, and Carmarthen feature for the first time, and Kent, of course, with the Cyclo Park. And so we think this year we've got something for everybody whilst making it the hardest edition ever.
You mentioned that a few of the top riders, especially the riders that like, you know, tough climbs, were missing last year. Was there dialogue with the teams and the riders about that, or was it just something that you thought we should address this?
No, both actually. There wasn't a lot of dialogue with the teams, but we did speak to some of them, and they said it could do with being a little bit tougher. And, you know, we had a few comments about it not really being hard enough. So together here internally at Sweet Spot, we decided to make it the toughest and just see what happens, you know, see if there's a new rider evolves out of continual climbing every day. They're not the Alps, excuse me, they're not the Pyrenees. We know that, but the roads over here are tough. You've only got to look at the Belgian team who wrecked the World Champs course. I know it's 270 kilometres, 280k this year, but they wrecked that course and they said it's going to be the strongest 20 riders at the end of the day that can stay a route as lumpy and as up and down as exposed as what our climbs are over here. And the same applies to the race this year. You know, all we can do, as you said, the final stage last year into Colwyn Bay, we thought was hilly and hard enough as it was, but then one team controlled it.
What, I mean, in the 5 years of the race, what have been your observations of how women's cycling, for, you know, the riders themselves individually, but also the teams have developed? Has there been a big change?
I think there has. There's been a big change at the top, in the, you know, the top five, top eight women's world tour teams have got stronger, and they're able to control a race of 5-6 days. In the early stages of this race, we put GB national squad in, we put the drops team, we put the Story Racing team in, with probably lesser known GB riders who we found weren't probably able to compete with the very top. So we had this security issue, not just with some of the British riders, but also some of the European riders that weren't able to stay with the front group all the time, and it split up. And at the back, when the pace does come out of the back group on the road, you've then got a security problem because you may have the race spread over 30 minutes. And this is a rolling row closure that we operate here, not a total closure. But this disparity from the top end to the back end, and I don't think, and I might be lambasted with critical remarks after this, but I don't think that the depth in talent is as spread across the World Tour teams as it is across the men, for obvious reasons. And I still think that the UCI are trying to do things far too quickly for the women's sport. They're trying to demand far too many things from organisers at this stage, and I'd say the development of women's sport needs another, at this level, at World Tour level, needs another 4 to 5 years before it'll be up there.
Yeah, I'm hearing this from teams and organisers that the UCI are demanding a lot and offering not very much in return. Would that be a fair comment?
I don't know what the UCI can offer in return, but they certainly can't increase the amount of women bike riders that exist. And so they're putting restrictions on the organisers. You know, you've got to have live television, you've got to pay contracts, you've got to increase prize money, you've got to have better accommodation. I think, other than the live TV, which is a whole different debate for us, we are providing, we're probably setting a bit of a standard, if you like, globally, in terms of our prize money is just under 100,000 euros. We have 4 5-star hotels. We really look after the teams. It's the same infrastructure, and why shouldn't it be that we provide for the men? And I know not all organisers are able to do that. And whether it's the UCI's problem or whether it's the national federation of the country that encourages women to take up this wonderful sport of ours, like BC do, and therefore they would reap the benefits because they're spreading the message that women's sport is alive and well and is looking forward. I think the federations, the national federations of countries, need to do a lot more to encourage women to ride bikes.
So that was Mick Bennett, really almost describing a race of two halves, with the last three stages pretty challenging First hilltop finish as well we've got this year. And I guess the big question after last year, where Corin Rivera won stage two and then managed to defend the lead for the rest of the week, thanks to a very strong Sunweb team, there was a lot of expectation, anticipation around the final stage in Wales last year, which didn't split the race up as much as people, partly because there was a tailwind up the main climb, partly because the main climb was a long way from the finish. But it was very controlled by Sunweb, and in the end it was a sprinter, a pure sprinter, Lotte Lepisto, who won the stage, which tells you everything about what happened on that stage. And there was a bit of disappointment about that. Do we think that the course this year will be provide a bit more of a challenging racing for the riders who really want, like Elisa Longo Borghino last year, really want to attack and try and break it up?
I personally think it will. I think there's enough differentiation between the different stages to provide a very different kind of race. And it always depends on how a race is raced and how it pans out. Because as you say, with Corin Rivera taking stage two last year, it almost then felt, certainly not processional, but it felt like a fairly safe race, at least until that final stage. And that's because I think that climb had been billed as being so difficult. A lot of the riders were surprised that it wasn't as tough as they expected it to be. And I'm hoping that will teach the riders and the teams lessons for this year, because we've got the second last stage that's been called the hilliest and most difficult stage of the women's tour. Hopefully everything won't be left until then, and there won't be that much anticipation. But I'm really looking forward to stage two, for example, the laps of, of Kent Cyclopark. I think that could be really exciting if you get lots of fans there. Just a good old day of partying should be good. I'm quite looking forward to the posh stage, stage three, from Henley to Blenheim.
The posh stage.
Well, it is really, isn't it? I'll have to put on my boat shoes or something for that day and brush my hair.
Giving the royal wave from the Skoda.
Yeah, we could.
I think that definitely, yeah.
I just meant you, Orla.
Oh. But I think it's definitely proof that we're not posh if we think, like, just the words Henley and Blenheim Palace is really posh.
I don't think you needed that to know that I'm not very posh. But I think that's
we could try and apply some posh touches to stage, maybe.
Shall we polish up?
Yeah, we should.
Posh ourselves up for that.
You could get a cream linen suit.
I've got that packed already. Oh, you've got that.
Right, actually, I'm sitting on my bed at the moment where I've got all my clothes laid out to pack. If you can pick anything from that dirty great pile that you think might work for a posh stage, good luck.
No, sorry, I can't see anything there.
No, exactly. But anyway,
maybe it's just best to burn all that and wear the ashes.
I'm not sure that, ashes make that great coverage in terms of clothing, but I could give it a go. Do you know what I'm going to do, actually? I'm going to totally rebel against the posh stage. I'm going to wear biker boots. I'm going to not brush my hair. I'm going to look like a right little renegade on stage three. There we go. Giving it to the posh people at Kenley.
They're just putting your excuses in now.
Exactly. But no, I'm going to pick that one because there are a few climbs, categorised climbs near the start of that, which could really break it up. And yeah, the hilly stages in Wales, stage five, should be really exciting. We're looking at another sprint finish, I think, on the final stage. But I do think that there's enough there, and we've got enough variety of riders to be able to make it exciting, and enough strong teams this year, not just Sunweb. We had strong teams last year as well, but you mentioned Trek, for example, and the team that they're bringing around Elisa Longo Borghini. It has the potential to be a fantastic stage, and sometimes, like I say, it's on the shoulders of the riders then how it's ridden as to whether or not it delivers. But I can't see much to complain about in the route, because it's not the Alps, it's not the Dolomites, it's not going to attract the likes of Ashley Milman Passio and Anna van der Breggen these days. But it is a good all-round course, I think, this year.
Well, I have to correct you there, Orla, because it is actually going to attract Ashley Milman Passio.
Oh, is she going?
Because she's on the start sheet that I've got. She's going, because she did miss it last year, and she did tell us it was because she didn't think it was challenging enough. So she's going this year with her new team, led by Marianne Vos. The top two are missing again, Anna van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten, presumably focusing on the Giro. And you wonder if that's also because of where the women's tour falls on the calendar, that, you know, if you're focused on the Giro Rosa, is it better to go off to an altitude training camp at this time, for example, because it must be a difficult decision. It's got so much going for it in terms of organization, you know, prize money, as Mick Bennett told me. They're really trying to raise the standard and give the women exactly the same, you know, hotels, food, prize money, etc., as the men. But, you know, it's difficult for riders who are wanting to really peak for a certain race to fit everything in, and some difficult choices have to be made. But it is a little bit disappointing that they're not there. But one rider who is coming back is Corin Rivera, the defending champion. And I asked her a bit about that, about those riders who were missing, when I spoke to her earlier today, and about, you know, her reflections on last year's race and what she's expecting from this year's race. So, Corin, you're heading back to the UK to defend your title. I guess you look back on last year's race with very fond memories.
Yeah, of course. It was a pretty special event last year, and I was riding well and the team was riding well. So some great memories from last year. And yeah, we hope to approach this year in similar fashion. Yeah, going for stages and NGC. But yeah, the whole team is strong, so it's a little bit more open, and it's not super clear that I'll be going for GC. I think we have some stronger girls on the team this year, and also the race is a lot harder and a bit hillier this year as well. So yeah, we'll go in open-minded, but it's not all pressure on me.
What do you know about the course this year? Obviously it's a day longer. Have you been able to study the courses, and particularly those last 3 days look quite tough?
Yeah, I've started to take a look at it this week, and it does definitely look quite tough. All the days are pretty long, except for that circuit on stage two. And then on top of that, yeah, quite a few of the stages later in the week have a lot of climbing. So, yeah, I like a harder race. So I think in the end it suits me and the team better. But yeah, it will anyways still be difficult, so.
It's how is it viewed in the women's peloton, the women's tour? Because it's obviously got great prize money. I think you stay in quite nice hotels. In some respects, it seems to be really raising the standard. But it's still not attracting all of the top women. And I wondered if you had any views on that, whether that's an issue with the course or with the timing. Because it's obviously, if people are preparing for the Giro Rosa as well, it's maybe slightly awkward timing.
Yeah, I don't know who specifically you're talking about, but I think there's still a lot of good riders who are going to this race. And yeah, I guess it is quite close to the Giro, but then again, like, for example, last year, Lucinda raced Turingen and the Women's Tour and still had a good Giro. So I think it is possible to do it if you want to do it. I can't say for sure why others aren't doing it, but I can tell you, one thing that's for sure is that I'll be there. So
great. And how is your form? I saw you at the Tour of Flanders where you had a crash, obviously there, and didn't finish the race. But you seem to have you were second in the final stage in Turingen recently. How's your form at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, every year is different, and you can't expect the same thing every year. So yeah, I had another rough spring compared to my first year in Europe. But yeah, life goes on, and I went home and had a good training period, and also had a pretty decent Tour of California. And then yeah, Turingen, I got in a good block and had a couple of showings on the podium. So feeling good, becoming a little more consistent, and nice to get some good days on the bike.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the cycling podcast Femina. And you can still get 25% off all your Science in Sport sports nutrition products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. So that was Corin Rivera, who, you know, made the point that Lucinda Brand, her Sunweb teammate, rode the women's tour last year, was part of her team that defended that jersey, and went on and rode a very strong Giro Rosa. So she doesn't think that it's impossible to do both. But as I said, clearly there are riders who are making the decision to go to one and not the other, and it is a pity that the strongest two female riders in the world, Van der Breggen and Van Vleuten, are both missing.
I mean, I think it kind of just opens it up a bit more. I mean, we've seen so much of... What I find exciting about this time of year is that you start seeing a new set of riders come to the fore and some new rivalries and new champions, because we've seen Van Vleuten and Van der Breggen all spring long, and obviously you can't keep... Riders can't keep their peak for that long anyway. But I think now it's exciting to see some new riders, and there's some great riders, some really, really attacking riders, and hopefully we'll see some new champions.
Do you not think,
well,
though, just for the prestige of the race, the standing of the race, that it's not great that those two riders in particular have chosen to miss it the last couple of years?
I don't think it needs it, really. It's fantastic whenever we get Anna van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten start on any race start line. But the women's tour has a prestige all of its own now. It doesn't, and not to say that if loads more top riders decided not to come, that it wouldn't suffer. But it has the likes of Marianne Vos, it has Lizzie Deignan, it has Corinne Rivera, five defending champions. We've got loads of stage winners coming back again. And it has the prestige that it has, not just because of the riders, but because of all those things that you mentioned, Richard. The fact that they do make such an effort with hotels, with treatment of the women, with television coverage, with all kinds of coverage. They're very supportive of us doing the podcast, and they embrace whatever way that they can facilitate media to come, which isn't always the case at different races. You know, the prize money, etc. I don't necessarily think in this edition that I'm missing those two riders particularly, because you don't want to see any race dominated too much. Their talents are much better suited to making the Giro Rosa an incredibly exciting race. And, you know, we get it in men's cycling where they choose between which kind of races suit them. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, I guess it's the climbers who have opted to miss it. And you can't change the geography of the country. And, you know, Cecilia Ludwig's missing, Katie Hall as well. You know, riders who are very strong climbers, Ashley Moulman-Passy is a kind of exception in coming and riding this year. But... it's you can't change the geography, but there are, you know, you could. I was trying to sort of tease this out of Mick Bennett a bit, that, you know, while the race has been running for 5 years, in that time that the standard has gone up a lot. And 5 years ago, I don't think, well, it's unlikely that teams would have been able to control the race in the way that Sunweb did last year, you know, with five really strong riders. You might have had a team with a really strong leader and perhaps, you know, a mixed abilities to support her. But now you've got a team, several teams there, who, if they have a rider in the lead, could do a really good job of controlling the race quite effectively on these sorts of courses. And, you know, I don't know whether there are different ways of making it challenging, and there are different parts of the country to go to where there are really serious climbs, maybe not long, but tough roads and tough climbs. So I think it'll be interesting this year, because I do think that, you know, the Cecilia Ludwig, for example, has gone to the a revived stage race in Brittany, which is an interesting one that's happening at the moment. She's obviously made that decision to go there. It's a race that probably suit her better. And I wonder if she again was quite aggressive last year, but didn't get a great reward for that aggression. And that's the problem. And if it's a different sort of race this year, where, and the weather could play a part too. If it's bad weather, you know, it will be split up more and tougher. And, you know, that might determine who comes next year.
It's also, we have to remember that it's also a stage longer this year. I remember talking to Bob Varney last year, and he was saying about the kind of toll that the grippy roads that you get in the UK takes on the riders, and the intensity of the racing does take its toll and does mean that the riders get more fatigued. And obviously, if we're adding an extra stage to the end of it, then that will be even more so. But I also think that, I mean, I think I'm completely to blame for this as well, that sometimes we focus too much on getting the bigger the mountain, the better the racing, which is not true, really,
no,
a lot of the time. And also, I think that when we look back, so we were just saying earlier about Corinne Rivera winning it, basically winning last year's race on stage two, but that was actually an incredibly unpredictable thing. And at the time, that was very exciting, because you think, wow, this person has gone in, this rider's gone into the lead early on a race, that on a stage that we wouldn't expect it. And it was the same when Kasia Niewiadoma won it previously as well. She, you know, made a solo break very early on in the race. And when you look back at it and you think, oh, this, you know, the leaders have kept the jersey for however many days, that's not so interesting. But they actually were completely overturning the expectations of that race. So it's hard to, even looking on paper, we might say, oh, you know, could do with a few bigger climbs. But I think it will be unpredictable regardless, because that is the nature of this race.
Right,
basically, Richard is trying to get the race to come to Scotland.
I was going to start piping some bagpipe music when he started saying there are parts of the country with mountains.
There's a women's tour of Scotland coming later this year, I will remind you.
That's good. I like that very much.
You know, you've got to give credit where it's due, because last year we all called for a summit finish. We've now got a summit finish. The Porsche stage has a category 2 climb 9.5 kilometres in, a category 1 climb 21 kilometres in. So, you know, we've got some climbs near the start of stages that could really make it much more exciting. They're not all loaded towards the end of the stages. I think that happened quite a bit last year from memory. Whereas the route is different this year, and I think a lot of, I wouldn't say criticism, maybe constructive criticism that was levelled at the route last year has been listened to. So I think we have to then give that a chance to play out on the road and see what kind of racing it develops and what kind of racing it reveals, rather, before we decide to take it to Scotland.
Indeed, right. So every previous winner of the Women's Tour is riding this year. Can you name them all?
Mariana Voss.
Don't look at your notes.
Mariana Voss, Lizzie Deignan, Corinne Oliveira,
Nivea Doma.
Lisa Brenard.
How many was there?
Lisa Brenard and Cassie Nivea Doma. Boom.
I think that's it. Yeah. Well done. Yeah, that was,
Give me another one. I love a quiz.
Name all of the stage winners ever.
I'm afraid.
I thought you meant one's coming back. I was going to go right to that one as well.
But some more.
It's like,
I mean, some more intriguing.
You spend the evening doing your English homework, and they ask the question you want. Me, teacher, me, and you put your hand up. I used to love that.
Some more interesting names, however, in the lineup. Some Lisa Brenner, you mentioned, she's in good form, leading WNT into the women's tour. Marta Bastianelli, who's been on fire this year, not. I don't know if she's had a little break. I think she has had a little break, but a bit of a mystery around her form. She was in Thuringen and didn't actually finish there. She did win stage two, but you know, I wonder if she'll carry forward that form that she had in the spring into the women's tour. Certainly a couple of the early stages should suit her. You know, the likes of Chloe Hosking as well for that Velo Park stage that you mentioned. Cassia Nivea Doma's back. Strong Kanya SRAM racing team with Alexis Ryan as well. And then Cicchini is in form. So there's lots of names, lots of teams who will serve up some exciting racing, you hope and think. And yeah, we're very much looking forward to it.
We are, and I wanted to throw out an appeal to our listeners if they want to help shape any of the themed news roundups over the 6 days of racing. Because last year, what did we have? We had Shakespeare. We're going through Shakespeare Country this year, aren't we? We had a Shakespeare day. We had Radiohead songs.
Radiohead
for one day. Mm-hmm. We had different themes. And then
Tom Jones lyrics, Tom Jones songs.
Yes, for the Welsh stage. Yep. We couldn't come up with anything more refinedly cultured.
How could we forget that?
So, yes, if anybody has any specific knowledge about the culture of any of the places that we're going through and would like to suggest a theme, I will do my best to sledgehammer any references into the news roundup, and then you can play a game of spot the reference by the end of the day. Should be fun, eh?
It's like we're getting our games for the car sorted out already. Like, you know, we're one step beyond I Spy, aren't we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, to mark our renewed partnership with Skoda, we're going to hear now from Sarah Story, Dame Sarah Story, who works closely with Skoda. And she's been very involved in helping them create the Skoda Cycling Academy. This is a cycling program designed specifically to support aspiring female riders with the opportunity to ride and train like the pros under world-class mentorship. And obviously Sarah is very involved with that. At the Tour de Yorkshire a few weeks ago, I spoke to her about the Academy. It's launching next week on stage during stage one of the Women's Tour, actually. Lionel Burney will be there doing following the progress and doing a few interviews, so we'll hear more from that as the year goes on. But I spoke to Sarah Story about the Academy and the idea behind it.
Yeah, we're going to have a testing day on June the 10th down at Lee Valley Velo Park, where we're going to have up to 50 riders. We'll have to narrow it down depending on how many applications we get, and we'll choose five based on a range of different criteria. Women who aren't yet professionals, who have that ambition to be. 17 to 25, I think, was the final age group we decided upon, and just trying to provide different opportunities for the women in that age category who haven't yet turned professional to experience things that will hopefully benefit them when they do in the future.
So what's the thinking behind it, and what's the ambition with it?
Well, Skoda wanted to continue to build on their This Is Our Time campaign, but obviously running a pro cycling team is very, very costly. So they wanted to look at the opportunities to provide something different that wasn't the really obvious thing. And there's nothing really around there outside of a GB Academy programme that would mimic that. So whilst we're not necessarily going to have the same structure with a track programme, this is purely focused on the road. It will give the girls different opportunities. We're very strongly linked to the J-1 girls, their Dezello Velo on Twitter, and there's the International girls as well that have formed off the back of the J-1 ride. So we'll go out to the Tour de France and ride a stage there that day ahead of the men. We'll do some other longer rides. We'll probably do the Étape de Tour, and we'll have some training and mentoring opportunities as well.
So it'll help the riders who are involved, obviously, but is there any ambition as well to maybe unearth some talent that's not been that's been hidden away?
Yeah, it's a possibility. We certainly use the Academy as an opportunity to scout a rider potentially to come onto our team next year and provide them with opportunities like we've had today, and just adding those stepping stones in. I think one of the biggest challenges within the women's development is that some of the leaps are really, really big. So you find that the youth riders, for example, at the Youth Tour of Scotland, Zoe Baxter, who's our rider, she rode 100 kilometres over the stages, whereas the boys rode 177. So that gap's quite big already. And then you get to juniors and they're racing up to maybe 75 kilometres, 90 kilometres in some of the stages or some of the events. I think they'll have 90 here in Yorkshire. And then you move up to the national series, and then you sort of go in the 100-110 k's, and then you can end up with, like, the women's tour this year is going to have some stages of close to 160 k. So those are big jumps, so we want to try and fill the gaps and provide some gentle transitions between those jumps so that people can be positive and confident when they move up to the next level.
I mean, is it also the case that there are quite a lot of opportunities now for maybe youth and junior riders, and then when the biggest jump is perhaps from junior to senior for a female rider without that under 23 category. So in that age group, are there a lot of people sort of falling through the cracks?
Well, I think we lose a lot of young women in all sport about the age of 16, and that's the age that they go into the junior category for cycling. And then obviously we don't have an under 23 category, so we've already got a smaller group that have gone into juniors, and then it gets even smaller, as you say, because there isn't that under 23 category. So we wanted to make sure it wasn't just under 23s within the Academy, because you can find that people develop a bit later, and that certainly happens in the women's peloton a lot more, and I'm one of those riders. I arrived when I was 27, so I think it's important that we have that age range, and then we also provide those longer ride opportunities. They're not races because they're sportive rides, but they're a great opportunity, and we'll assess how it's worked and build on it. This is a new thing, so hopefully it'll be something that we can continue and grow.
So that was Sarah's story, and as I say, we'll hear more about the Skoda Academy as the year goes on. We'll also be featuring some of the women involved in the Internationales, the women who are riding the route of the Tour de France one day ahead of the men this year. We followed that a little bit last year, but it's a bigger group this year. It's more organised than ever before, and quite a contingent of British women going off to ride that. So I'm meeting a couple of them tomorrow, and we'll hear from them in a future episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina, and that's also supported by Skoda. So, listen, ladies, you better go and pack. You better go and get all that clothing there into some kind of bag, Orla.
Into some sort of order, I know.
And
I know.
Rose, you've got a hen weekend before the
so
women's
tour. So I've
got
to put in the willy straws, take them out before I get back to Beckles.
Oh, no, bring the willy straws.
I don't even know, what are you talking about?
Oh, my goodness. Can
what do you mean,
actually,
what are you talking about?
Rose,
what are you talking about?
Can we please... Can you please save a few?
Is this suitable for family audience?
Accoutrements.
Yes, I will.
For our curry night on Sunday night, can we try to shock Richard as to what
he looks? I have to say, Richard is completely baffled.
I am. I don't know what you're talking about. I've never been on a hen weekend.
Well, I'll bring I'll bring the hen do to the women's tour. It'll just be a continuous hen do.
Oh my goodness! Let's see it. We'll all wear sashes.
Yeah.
We'll get t-shirts made up and we'll all have nicknames. Richard,
yeah, that'll be
already.
Great.
I'm not,
true. We need some.
I'm not sure if I can do the women's tour anymore. Something's just come up.
We can do t-shirts emblazoned with the Womb Hens Tour.
Yeah.
God, dear.
That is great.
So, this is so different to working with Lionel and Daniel. Are we going to try and repeat our groundbreaking water feature of last year, or we've got some new ideas for this year? What are we going to do?
Well, if
we
do
see what the big issue
feature, it'll be a lot easier for me this year, because last year I was trying to hide the fact that I was pregnant, and so my bladder was always in the point of exploding, basically. And so we were doing the water feature, and as I was doing the interviews, I couldn't then get that thought out of my head, so it was absolute torture to do. So yes, if we do another feature like it this year, it'll be slightly easier. But we should, let's think of something fun again. Let's take suggestions, shall we?
Yeah, let's just crowdsource everything. Excellent. So listen, let's go and get ourselves ready and mentally prepared for 6 days on the road again. And I'm looking forward to it. We'll be with you from Monday night all the way through to Saturday. So join us here. Thanks, Rose.
Not here.
No,
there. You mean
here? Wherever you're listening,
it'll still be in their ears.
In your ears.
On the usual channels.
Oh my god! Very philosophical. We're going up. I can sense we're going up the podcast awards standings right now by just talking about it.
Let's hope this isn't part of our entry for next year. Right, Rose. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys, and see you after the weekend very soon.
Thank you, Orla.
See you at Stansted, folks. Can't wait.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.